headlines. Afghans say a U.S.-led airstrike has killed dozens of civilians in the country's south. Also ahead this hour, Israeli troops attack a West Bank demonstration against the segregation wall. Stampede in Germany, over a dozen die as people try to enter a music festival.
It's 2:30 in the morning here in the capital, Tehran. You're watching another bulletin of world news on Press TV.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Well, it's been nearly a decade since the U.S.-led war began in Afghanistan. The U.S. and its allies said the war would bring security to the war-torn country.
A decade later, Afghan civilians are still losing their lives on a daily basis. But this time, it's the U.S.-led military machine that's killing them. Let's take a closer look.
Another U.S.-led airstrike on civilian areas in southern Afghanistan. Locals in Helmand province say dozens of civilians have been killed.
The reality is civilians have been not protected, and Taliban and other terrorist groups are getting more aggressive. And we have more violence, more attacks, and the security is getting worse. It means that strategy was not working yet, and I have a big doubt that it's going to work at the future.
Hours before the Helmand attack, NATO said several more U.S.-led soldiers had died in bomb attacks in southern Afghanistan. With the latest fatalities, the foreign troop death toll in the Afghan war near the 2,000 mark. An increase in civilian casualties and a rise in foreign death toll have made the war in Afghanistan ever more unpopular. Afghans want foreign troops out of their country. According to latest surveys, 68% say US and NATO forces are not in Afghanistan to protect the people. They said foreign troops were there to destroy or occupy the country. A recent opinion poll in the United States also showed 61% of Americans viewed the war in Afghanistan as a no-win scenario for Washington. Over half of the respondents wanted the Obama administration to set a timetable for bringing troops back home. The increasing public opposition has prompted Washington to cancel routine memorial services countries normally organize for their fallen soldiers. But with thousands of new troops being deployed to the deadly battle in Afghanistan, many wonder how the Obama administration is going to explain rising troop casualties. This as it becomes more vividly clear that the war is a failure, since Taliban militants have gotten stronger, the security situation has worsened, and the Afghans have become more wary of their future.
Afghan officials say militants have killed one of the two Americans captured in the country's eastern province of Logar. Logar governor's spokesman told Press TV that militants have left the body of the U.S. national in the Charkha district mountains. He did not specify which group had been behind the seizure. Meanwhile, NATO says two American troopers are missing in Logar. The alliance says it has launched a road and air search to find them. Last year, a U.S. trooper was seized by Taliban militants in the east of the country. Efforts to find him have so far failed.
Clashes have broken out between Palestinian protesters and Israeli soldiers in the West Bank village of Beit Ahmad. Israeli troops fired tear gas to disperse the crowd, but there are no reports of any injuries. The Palestinians, together with international activists, were protesting against a separation wall Israel has been building in the area for the past 8 years. Now the barrier swallows chunks of Palestinian territories and cuts off access to land and water for many. The International Court of Justice has ruled that the wall violates international law. It has called on Tel Aviv to tear down what it has built.
Hamas has slammed a UN call on aid groups to avoid reaching Gaza by sea. The Palestinian resistance movement says the demand is unacceptable and illegal. The United Nations has said aid for Gaza should only be delivered by established land routes. The call came after Israel threatened to intercept two Lebanese vessels preparing to break Israel's blockade of the impoverished territory. Hamas says the UN position is a contribution to the three-year siege. It has urged aid groups to continue to try to break the blockade.
We're certain these Israeli threats will not hinder international activists and will only stir reaction and opposite outcomes, which will encourage activists to reach Gaza to challenge and break the blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip.
The fresh Israeli threats come over a month after it attacked a Turkish-flagged aid flotilla in international waters. The attack left 9 activists dead and injured many others.
Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri has addressed concerns voiced earlier this week by the Secretary General of Hezbollah regarding the special tribunal. The country's former Prime Minister, now our correspondent Serena Shim, has more from Beirut.
Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri has said that the international tribunal investigating the assassination of his father will not lead to any crisis or civil strife during a conference marking the official founding of his future movement. Hariri devoted much of his speech to the international tribunal, saying achieving justice is not open for negotiation.
We don't base our judgment or our opinions on any information related to the investigation into the assassination of Rafiq Hariri. From our perspective, finding out the truth regarding his assassination is a matter of principle.
Hariri ruled out the possibility of a period of chaos in Lebanon, resulting from the findings of the tribunal. But analysts believe that Hariri's biggest concern is to find out the truth behind his father's assassination.
At least Saad Hariri's approach is smart and correct, based on what we know. Frankly, I thought that was a good response, and it seems like both sides are trying to play down the tensions and to have a peace and consensus during this very difficult period.
This comes as Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah recently said he had been told by the Prime Minister that some of its members will be among those charged with the assassination of the former Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri, who died in 2005. Hariri also appeared to respond to Hezbollah's leader, who had called on the March 14th Alliance, including Hariri's movement, to confess to mistakes being committed in the past, especially regarding Syria. There were no Syrians among those expected to be indicted, despite numerous early accusations that Syria was behind the assassination.
Since last year, I have paid 4 successful visits to Damascus. It is my duty to say these visits led to a new chapter in relations with the Syrian regime and especially President Bashar al-Assad. This new chapter is based on brotherly and friendly ties and bilateral respect for the independence and sovereignty of one another.
Hariri praised what he called his 4th successful visit to Syria, which he said have opened a new page with Damascus. Hezbollah had called for addressing the issue of Syrian workers killed previously in Lebanon. The Lebanese Prime Minister also made no mention of 4 Lebanese generals who were falsely indicted in the Hariri assassination and imprisoned for 4 years. Hezbollah has called for reinstating these generals to their previous position.
Although the verdict has not yet been determined, many politicians here in Lebanon think that the outcome of this trial could lead Lebanon right back into the sectarian strife it has been trying to avoid since Lebanon has had a very bitter past. Serena Shim reporting for Press TV, Beirut.
Elsewhere, at least 18 people have died in a stampede inside a tunnel at a parade in the West German city of Duisburg. Police say 9 of the dead are women, with 6 others men. Media reports put the number of injured at up to 100 people. Overcrowding at the tunnel entrance to the Techno Music Festival led to the stampede. About 1.5 million people were attending the festival. The annual event was going on in the venue when people tramped each other in the tunnel. Rescue operation was hampered by the huge crowds. Police have set up an emergency first aid station near the entrance. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has expressed her sympathy to the victims of the event. Our Berlin correspondent gives us more details on how the deadly incident happened.
Actually, it nearly happened because of safety measures, because the crowd wanted to gain access into the site, and they were being controlled at the entrance by security that needed to check every single person coming in. And people were, I guess, getting a bit impatient, wanted to access the site, and pushed through a tunnel, which led to gates falling down, and the security then, of course, stopped checking bags and people, and everyone, you know, rushed into the site. But inside of the tunnel, there was a huge amount of panic, and more people were pushing from the back than could get out of the tunnel in the front.
Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan says he might amend a law which allows the armed forces to meddle in domestic politics. This after the opposition stepped up pressure on Erdogan to annul the law, which it calls authoritarian. Now Erdogan says he's ready to take up the opposition's call. The premier proposed setting up a commission to discuss the issue in all aspects. He also said the parliament would convene an extraordinary session on the issue if necessary. Erdogan made the remarks as he started campaigning ahead of a September referendum on reforms to the Constitution.
You're watching the World News here on Press TV. A quick reminder of our top stories this hour. Afghans say a U.S.-led airstrike has killed dozens of civilians in the country's south. Israeli troops attack a West Bank demonstration against the segregation wall. Stampede in Germany. Over a dozen die as people try to enter a music festival.
We'll still ahead right here on Press TV. More on the renewed tensions in the Korean Peninsula. Stay tuned. Is studying a project to build the world's first experimental nuclear fusion reactor. Head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, Ali Akbar Salehi, said an $8 million fund had been set up to conduct serious research in the area. He said it will take some 20 to 30 years to commercialize the process. Salehi also said all preparations have been made for the launch of the Bushehr nuclear power plant in August. He said all tests have successfully been completed. Tehran says it needs nuclear power and plant to meet its growing domestic energy demands.
Meanwhile, the foreign ministers of Iran, Brazil, and Turkey are to meet in Istanbul on Sunday. That's according to Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Ramin Mehmanparast. He says the top diplomats plan to discuss a nuclear fuel swap declaration they brokered back in May. According to the declaration, Iran would send 1,200 kilograms of low-enriched uranium to Turkey. That would be in return for fuel for Tehran research reactor.
A dangerous virus known as Stuxnet has hit computers in Iran. The virus reportedly tries to steal information from industrial control systems. Now, data compiled by a Symantec security company shows nearly 60% of systems infected are located in Iran. Symantec says that the software may have been in circulation since January. Though it seems Iran has been the prime target, Indonesia and India have also been affected by the virus. Stuxnet spreads via USB devices. It was first discovered by a Belarus-based antivirus company. The malicious software was reportedly found on a system belonging to an Iranian customer. Earlier this week, Siemens posted a free virus scanner to deal with the malicious software. Most of the control systems affected by the virus are made by Siemens. Tensions have once again escalated on the Korean Peninsula over the sinking of a South Korean warship that left 46 sailors dead near the disputed border between the two Koreas back in March.
Well, the renewed tensions come less than a week after the U.S. announced new economic sanctions against Pyongyang and organized a joint naval exercise with South Korea in response to the sinking of the South Korean warship.
North Korea accuses Washington of driving the situation on the Korean Peninsula to an extreme phase. A day ahead of the joint U.S.-South Korea military drill, Pyongyang has threatened to take strong physical measures against U.S. sanctions and military provocations. North Korea describes war games in the Sea of Japan as a threat to its sovereignty. It says it's prepared for what it calls a sacred war if the two countries go ahead with the naval maneuvers. It has also warned that it will bolster its nuclear deterrence in response.
There will be physical response and against the threat imposed by the United States militarily. And the Asian countries are in need of peace and development, and DPRK is also moving to that end.
The renewed tension comes as the U.S. accused North Korea of being engaged in a campaign of provocative, dangerous behavior. Washington and Seoul accused Pyongyang of torpedoing a South Korean warship back in March.
We regret and condemn the actions of North Korea, the belligerence, the provocation, the sinking of the South Korean ship, Shonan, the proliferation of both conventional arms and nuclear technical know-how.
North Korea has vehemently denied the charge. The UN Security Council discussed the issue but avoided blaming the North for the sinking of the vessel. The U.S. has rejected North Korean threats as a war of words. However, it remains to be seen why Washington would want to provoke Pyongyang into what could trigger an actual war on the Korean Peninsula.
BP has moved ships and workers back to the Gulf of Mexico oil spill site to plug the firm's blown-out well.
And this comes as a tropical storm Bonnie has weakened over the Gulf of Mexico. BP is going to start what's called a static kill operation within 3 days. Static kill involves pumping heavy mud and possibly cement into BP's blown-out well in order to plug it. The static kill operation is followed by digging a relief well near the leaking one. BP will then plug its damaged rig permanently. The well has gushed millions of barrels of crude into the sea, causing the worst environmental disaster in American history. As the World Heritage Committee begins its annual meeting in Brazil, Istanbul's status as the World Heritage Site will be on the agenda.
The city, which combines historical sites dating back to Byzantine times, has come under criticism for not doing enough to protect its cultural heritage. Jody Sobral reports from the Old City.
As UNESCO's World Heritage Committee convenes for its annual meeting in Brazil, the famous skyline of Istanbul's minarets is in danger of losing its claim as a World Heritage Site. City planners say this would be devastating, not only for Istanbul, but could have broader implications.
Turkey has six other listed sites. If Istanbul is placed on the endangered heritage list, it will open the way for these other sites to be included on this list.
Typhoon says it could also damage any future aspirations for recognition of new sites that are being discovered, such as these Byzantine ships unearthed in 2007, thought to be be the earliest in world history, which date the site back to the 11th century.
There are new sites that should be listed as World Heritage, but this would make it difficult. It will be a huge loss to Istanbul's image and standing, and it will be because of poor administrative practices, and the world will see this.
The problem, say urban planners, is that in a city that has expanded to 16 million people over the past 10 years, no one is really tracking the changes.
It's really hard to define what's going on in the city, actually, because in terms of social life or economic life or environmental changes, we have a really rapid change.
One of the projects under fire by UNESCO is this metro bridge currently under construction that will connect the old city with Greater Istanbul, something the committee says will destroy the famous skyline that sits above it.
UNESCO actually has been trying to tell this for years now, and they've been trying to tell that we are not protecting our city properly.
Leading architects and urban planners are now working against the clock to preserve the city's title as a World Heritage Site. They hope it won't be too late after UNESCO's repeated warnings to authorities here. Jody Sobral, Press TV, Istanbul.
Well, with that, we come to an end of world news here on Press TV. Don't forget to log on to our website, as always, presstv.ir, for more details on these stories and a lot more. The website being updated every minute as we speak. News pouring in from across the globe, Iran, the Middle East, U.S., Asia Pacific. There's more on health, science, sports, and technology. Scrolling down, you can always participate in our My Vote section. We would love to hear your opinion. And also check out the details of how to SMS us your comments and feedback. That and a lot more on PressTV.ir.
Well, the 19th stage of the Tour de France has ended. Find out who won and is the overall tour leader next with Amir Hossain on Sports International.